Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for being with us as always. And with us every week, once again, for the most scintillating hour in finance radio, the catchphrase, the new catchphrase. Well, it's not new anymore. But anyway, we got a great show planned for you today. Again, broken record, but so much to talk about. And we're going to flip it up a little bit different format for this week's show. There's an interview before we even get the market update. There's an interview, and Darren, this is for you too. This is a homework assignment. Okay, we got an interview that everybody needs to listen to, and the reason why I want you to listen to it is, as I've stated many times on the show before, I'm a dude's voice coming through the speaker. I get that. I'm another guy trying to pitch you something on the radio. Hopefully, those of you that have listened to the show and do listen to the show on a regular basis know that that is not the case. But I'm sure there's some skeptics out there. I'm sure there's some people out there that think I'm doing what we call in the industry talking my book, right? I'm throwing fodder at you to get you to buy into what I'm selling. And that is not the case. It's not the way our firm works. We don't have a set list of products that we're trying to push and pack or create or structure a story around them to move them. That's not the way we work. Rather, we look at the landscape and the markets and the economy the way they are. And we're constantly looking at different ways to best deploy our clients' capital. And when we say the best ways, we're talking about, A, the best risk-adjusted ways, right? Risk-adjusted returns, often forgotten. A concept that is orphaned, typically, at the top of economic cycles, at the height of bull markets. And unfortunately, it's typically painful. It typically yields painful results. And so we got to keep that eye, right? Know your risk radio. We got to keep that eye ever present on risk management. If I am taking risk, am I being properly compensated? Does that risk fit into my long-term goals? And the concept that I want retail investors to understand, and it's a tough one, is that we are all tempted to look at the success of investing through a rearview window, right? Through a rearview mirror, where we look back and we go, well, that guy made more money, so that's the best way to go about it. No, it's not, right? If we used that same logic in the rest of our lives, we would determine that the greatest waste of money would have been homeowners insurance over the period of time that we owned our house because we never had a fire. Does that make sense? Same basic idea. Because risk is ever present, and it's much more ever present in markets and economies than it is in homes burning down. For instance, I know that there are many of you, I've met with you, the majority, who have had significant drawdowns in their portfolio of greater than 30%, probably more than once over the last 20 years. Aren't very many of you that had a house burned down. And no way am I making light of that. What I'm saying is that we as human beings are very bad at understanding risk. and me included. I don't mean that as a slight. I mean that in terms of our ability to invest. Investing is all about risk assessments. We think about the upside. We think about all this. But the thing that we forget typically is the risk aspect. And again, the main part of our business is managing stock portfolios. Okay, so do not think that this is a pitch to get you out of it. Stocks are the greatest wealth generator of all time. But like I have dealt with several of my clients, so we have quick little story, anecdotal story, Darren. Here we go. Beautiful people, too. Beautiful people. But two new clients in the last 2 weeks joined our firm, right? Became clients of the firm. Both had portfolios of $2 million or more. And I had a conversation with somebody. I digress for a second. When we talk about the size of the portfolios, guys, do not think that that excludes people. We don't talk about firm minimums on the show for a variety of reasons. We believe that we have a mandate, if you will, a responsibility that if people want our help, we will give it to them. We're not going to limit it to a size of a portfolio. I understand why other firms do, especially as we've grown. You know, the $40,000 and $50,000 account is, you know, on an economic basis, guys, I'll just be honest with you, it's not an economic win for us, right? It requires the same level of care and attention. It requires, you know, we're taking on the same amount of risk managing that asset as we are a big portfolio, but we're getting paid less. Nevertheless, we've never lost sight of the fact that I'm extremely blessed to be where I'm at. I'm extremely blessed to be on the show talking to you today. And if somebody wants help, even if it's not the most economically expedient thing for us to do, we're going to do it. I don't pick out the multi-million-dollar portfolio stories to impress. It's just typically where we see these things. It's sort of just how the dice roll. So I just want to say that caveat. But regardless, so we have two clients join the firm in the last 2 weeks. And both clients, first of all, both were very ardent and studious savers, very responsible in their financial lives, and did a very good job investing their own money. Did a very good job. But both of these clients had exposure of 50% or greater in their entire portfolio to Apple and Microsoft. Okay, two stocks. And they'd done really well with it, right? Great picks, right? You did well. But what I reminded them is I said, listen, you have to detach yourself from the outcome because you have been accumulating for retirement. That's still too risky. There's no professional manager in the world that would tell you to have 50% of your fund, your allocation tied up in two stocks, but it worked. Does it mean that it's the right thing to do? No, I'm glad you did it. Right? It's like raising kids. You know, it's, you know, kid hanging. I walk out in the front room of our house the other day, and my 4-year-old has climbed up the stairs via the outside banister. So he is hanging, right? He's not on the stairs. He's outside of them, and he decided that's how he's going to climb up the stairway. Dad, I did it. Well, great, son, but that is a horrible risk-adjusted return, right? You could have gotten up the stairs by walking. Now you're hanging like Spider-Man from a spindle. So again, this concept of risk-adjusted returns. And that game changes, that math changes as soon as we get into retirement or as soon as we're bumping up against it. Because now, whether you like it or not, guys, you know, this is like the lesson of valuation. I was talking to somebody. Look, you may not believe that valuation is the most important aspect of buying a business or making an investment. You may not believe it. You will eventually. Either through coercion or willful learning, you will learn the importance of valuation. Risk management is the exact same thing. Once we enter retirement, once we're within 5 years of retirement, the whole ballgame has to change. The game is not about accumulation any longer. It's about financing the rest of your life. And it doesn't mean that we're going to sit back and live off of, you know, CDs or what. It doesn't mean that we don't have any upside. What it means is that the risks have to be properly proportioned in the portfolio. And the aim of the portfolio must be to finance retirement and must be less focused on capital appreciation. Why is that? Because it is much easier on a risk basis. We can take much less risk if we are focused on providing a stream of income in retirement. And I don't mean structured. I'm not talking about CDs and structured income annuities. It's not what I'm talking about. But what I'm saying is that is a much easier goal than trying to generate 20 to 25% returns. Because if we are out on that risk curve, if we are invested in things that will provide that 20 and 25, 30, 35% annualized return, and our whole portfolio is geared toward that end, you must understand that the nasty drops and pullbacks will come with it. In the past, it hasn't mattered as much to you because during those nasty pullbacks and crashes, you were pumping more money into the account. In retirement, that goes in reverse. There is no benefit to a drop in asset prices. So we have to gear a portfolio A to make sure that regardless of economic circumstances, we can provide that cash flow. B, we have to make sure that we build a portfolio that can take advantage of those downturns, meaning that we have enough capital built up in the portfolio to deploy during those opportunities to replicate the type of success you had in accumulation, dumping more money in at the bottom. We've got to have a portfolio that has that and the ability to keep paying you because look, market drops 40%, your cost of living doesn't. So your withdrawals become a much bigger percentage of your portfolio. So we're burning assets down. It's the number one reason why retirement plans fail. It's not because of the drop in stocks or the drop in the value of the portfolio. It's because the people continue to need the same amount of cash every month. And that withdrawal that was a 3.5% of their overall portfolio turns into a 7 or 8% annual withdrawal rate because of the drop in value of the underlying assets. And so, A, we're burning the assets down way too fast, and B, when the market eventually comes back, even when it crosses over the period that it was at previously, you still have way less money because you burned up your ammo. So I hope that makes sense. And I wanted to tell that story of our clients even before we got to the market update because I wanted to, first of all, I want to tell you about, you know, no firm minimums. But the other aspect of it was to say, look, we don't invest in the rearview mirror. Just because it worked doesn't mean you should continue doing it. Like my son, just because you climbed up the outside of the stairway, hanging from the spindle like a spider monkey, doesn't mean that's the way you should go to your room every night. And investing is much the same. Because the risk is ever present. At any time, something could happen, especially in an economy and a global economy that has never been more levered than it is now. We are 2x or more in almost every category in terms of leverage that we had in 2007. Once again, does that mean the sky is falling? I will say again, no. That's not what we're talking about. We have never got on here and told you to sell stocks. We didn't tell you to sell stocks, and we didn't sell stocks last December when it looked like everything was tanking. And why didn't we? Because of what happened this year. And we also know that 70% of time markets go up. So that means every time there is a shock, every time the storm clouds gather, it doesn't mean it's time to fold up and head for the hills. Because the majority of times, it's just a buying opportunity. But eventually it won't be. And that's where I wanted to get into the different format we're launching today. If you like this show, if you consider yourself somewhat of an astute investor or an interested party in the science or the art of investing, there is an interview that came out this week that you must listen to. We've got a few excerpts from it. I can't run it all, right? Spend the whole hour running somebody else's interview. But it was an interview that a gentleman by the name of Jeff Gundlach, who has been anointed the Bond King runs a firm called Double Line Capital out of Los Angeles. And he is widely considered the preeminent bond investor in the world. They have some equity exposure at Double Line, but they have phenomenal performance. Gundlach has been, somewhat of a clairvoyant voice in economics and in bonds, and certainly one of the most respected voices in the world of finance and investing, with a track record that backs that up, backs up that status. So we're talking about a practitioner. And somebody that has a track record that validates, the faith that guys like me put, not like I believe him wholeheartedly or just because of who he is. But what I'm saying is he's not just out there, speaking his book and trying to make waves. He's got the track record to back up his opinions. He's an expert, bona fide. And It is an interview that you must listen to. It's about 45 minutes long. And it, like I said, came out this week. It's on CNBC. You can also get the full uninterrupted interview on YouTube. Just take the 45 minutes, whether you dial it up in your car. Now, I will say this. I don't think it's more important than our podcast, of course. No, I'm just kidding. But whether you dial it up in your car and listen to it while you're driving, whether you listen to it while you're at home this weekend, doing whatever, just listen to it. And I'm not saying it because he happens to agree with the vast majority of things we've been saying, but I say it because of what I've said ever since we've started this show, that look, I make no bones about it. The reason we're on the show is to get clients. I also know that the vast majority of people that listen to this show, and I can tell by the podcast numbers, the overwhelming majority of people that listen to this show aren't clients and won't become clients. And that's fine. We want to disseminate information that is valuable to everybody. We really do. You might not believe that, but we are the good guys. And we're trying our best to warn people about possible pitfalls. And I want to air this because I want you to know for a fact that we are not blowing smoke. That these risks out here are real. And I want you to have a better understanding how the financial industry works. So we're going to air that in the next segment. We're not going to air the whole thing. We got a couple excerpts that we're going to run for you. But I strongly encourage everybody to go listen to it. It's 45 minutes. I think it's fascinating. But they address the Fed. They address the corporate bond market. They address interest rates. And why do we focus on bonds so much, guys? Because people don't realize this. The bond market is about four times larger than the equity market. The bond market is the foundation. In the industry, we refer to bond money as smart money. And here's why. A bond investor's maximum upside is the yield that the bond is paying him most of the time. Now, if he's buying distressed debt and all that kind of stuff, that's a different ballgame. But most of the time, or even if he's using it tactically like we do, which is, we'll do trades centered around bonds. But essentially, most of the time, a bond investor's money, he knows exactly what he's going to make. It's a fixed income. That's why we call it fixed income, right? It's not like if he goes out and buys Apple's bonds and Apple does really well, that bond will start paying him 20% instead of the 5% that's the coupon rate. Right. The best he can do is get that income. So what do bond investors typically do? They typically deep dive on the research of a company much deeper than equity investors. And they're looking at pitfalls. They're looking at things that would disrupt that cash flow, that could threaten that income stream that they're receiving from that security. And so what we've seen throughout history is typically the bond market will show distress before equities will. And so that's why we focus so much on the bond market. The other reason, and I think it's more applicable now today than any other time, is that when we live in a world where the number one buyer, nominal buyer of stocks in the U.S. marketplace over the last 10 years, over this whole advance, has been the corporations themselves via buybacks. And the vast majority of those buybacks have happened via debt, meaning companies taking out debt, creating bonds, right? Taking out debt, and then using that capital raised from that debt issuance to purchase their own stock back. Okay? So one of the things we're watching is when that transmission mechanism, right? The acquisition of debt and then the deployment of capital going out into the economy and out in the markets to buy back their own stock, when that gets disrupted, which it will, right? Every good thing comes to an end. When that gets disrupted, that is going to cause a lot of waves. Think about the real estate collapse. You saw it first in the bond markets. That's what caused the issue. The waves and the distress in the bond markets are what fed into equity markets. The problem in the financial collapse was not that Lehman Brothers stock dropped so much. The problem was the bonds and the debt they had on their balance sheet going belly up. That was the issue. That was the driver. So that's why we focus so much on the bond markets. Not as fun, not as sexy as equity markets, but absolutely just as important and actually more important. It is the foundation of the modern investment or the security system, the financial system. It's debt. And when you've got debt at 340 or 350% of GDP, which to call that a record is sort of like saying Shaquille O'Neal is tall, right? Well, yeah. I mean, it's so far off the map that we need to be watching the debt markets almost exclusively. Because here's the deal. When we look at what's driving markets, right, it's primarily, like I said, here in the United States market, it's corporations buying back their own stock and Fed juicing the markets. They're allowed to do that because debt markets are still somewhat calm. Debt markets will be what takes that key out of the ignition and takes the power out of the Fed's hands and out of the corporation's hands. When these over-indebted institutions lose access to capital markets because either their cost of borrowing gets too high or their credit rating gets too low or a combination of the two, whatever the case may be, that is when the issues are really going to start in earnest. So that's why we're focusing on that. And I think that kind of sums up the market update. Again, there's not a lot of new economic news. We seem to have a bit of a plateauing effect going on right now as far as bad economic news. But there's also several more yellow lights are getting turned on. Think about this. Everybody's focused on the trade deal. What have we been saying literally for the last entire year? If a trade deal gets passed, it is not going to be concrete. By any stretch of the imagination, it's not going to be meaningful because China literally has zero incentive to sign a real trade deal that really holds their feet to the fire until the next election. They just don't. And that if a trade deal gets passed, it's going to be somewhat cosmetic in nature, right? And I think that's what you got going on here. Everybody goes, well, yeah, but the market loves it. Look, guys, I don't think that's what's driving markets at all. I think the market, the Fed suspended QE in late 2015? Something like that, 2015, early 2016. Okay, so that source of stimulus got cut off, and then Trump passed the tax cuts. Markets kept going up. And then tax cuts took effect in 2017, right? And then you had no new tax cuts, no real form of stimulus, no more QE from the Fed in 2018. And what happened? Markets went sideways for almost 2 years, but extraordinarily volatile, right? It wasn't just sideways. Then all of a sudden, we broke out to new all-time highs in September, early October. Or maybe it was even early November. Anyway, we here in the fall. Well, what happened? New form of stimulus came in. Fed started growing their balance sheet at $100 billion a day in certain days through that standing repo facility they put in place. Here the market goes back up again. This market is addicted to stimulus. It cannot keep moving up unless the spigot keeps pumping. Okay, so I'm not bashing Donald Trump. I'm just saying when we sit there and talk about the strongest economy in the history of the country, it's not even close to being accurate. Now, in comparison to other developed markets, absolutely. We're the fastest horse on the track, without question. And I think Trump deserves a lot of credit for that. But we also need to be conscious of the risks and the excesses built up because they're still there and they're climbing every day. In 2019, Darren, did you know this? In 2019, our deficits in fiscal 2019 ended up being $1.27 trillion deficits. Okay. That is 6% of our entire economic output, Meaning this, do you remember, and you probably don't, but do you remember late 90s, Clinton was in office, we had the Republican Congress in control, and they balanced the budget. That was the last time the budget was balanced. You remember that? You don't?
Not at all.
Okay. So you'll have to take my word for it, okay? It was the Contract for America. Newt Gingrich called it the Contract for America. They balanced the budget.
Okay. I trust you.
Gotcha. Okay. So if we balanced the budget today, we would see a GDP drop, a hit to our economic output by probably around 5%. Okay. Now, to put that in context, during the great financial crisis, our GDP, our economic output, dropped by about 2.8%. So the government balancing the budget, not paying off debt, right, spending the same amount it's bringing in, would result in an economic recession or a drop in economic output almost twice that of the great financial crisis. It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
So why aren't we seeing one?
Because the mechanism hasn't been disrupted, right? Because the Fed can still print. They can still backfill that space, right? As long as what it used to be in our economy is that capital creation was done. If you had a company that built a widget for $5 and sold it for $8, okay, innovation, intellectual property, software, technology, whatever it is, that guy or somebody would come along and they would find a way to build that same widget for $2.50, right? That difference between the old production cost and the new production cost is essentially synonymous with the creation of capital. Now, debt, really, when we create debt, we're getting into the economic weeds here, but when we create debt, it is synonymous in a fractional reserve banking system of creating new capital. But that productivity boost, that's the real capital gain. That's the excess of, right, think about that. If we got an economy that's built up building widgets at five and somebody figures out how to do it at 250, that frees up a lot of capital to deploy in other parts of the economy, right?
But how often are they finding that other person to build it overseas?
Well, that's a whole nother issue. I mean, that's the outsourcing of labor, and that's another problem too, right? So what the Fed is essentially doing, though, and it's interesting because this whole run-up that we've had over the last 10 years is also with a record low level of productivity by our economy. So what the Fed has done is they've stepped in and artificially created that flow of excess capital, right? And so every time we get wobbly, they turn the spigots on and just start flooding the zone with capital again, right? And so they're sort of fabricating that same thing. So some would argue that they're taking the impetus for, you know, technological revolution, you know, advancement. They're taking it away. Now, we've seen tons of technological advancements. But think about it. Think about the companies that are doing it. A lot of them, you know, these tech-forward companies, the SaaS companies, software as a service, and cloud companies, a lot of these guys are burning cash. Now, eventually, they may turn to profitability. I don't buy it. I mean, I think that a lot of them won't, because generating profit is a lot harder than people need to act like it is. But yet, you still have, like I said, the Fed is just backfilling that space. They're providing that liquidity. But yeah, if we balanced our budget, we would be looking at a drop in economic activity that was twice that of the financial crisis. Just balancing the budget, not paying it off. And the crazy thing is that's the deficits that happen at the height of a bull market, the longest bull market in U.S. history, when tax revenues and budgets should be the healthiest they've ever been. It's pretty wild to think about it. So we're sitting there going, man, what are these deficits going to look like in the next recession? Another interesting thing, study came out this week, showed corporate tax receipts, the amount of tax receipts, which are directly attributable to profit, right? Can't pay taxes unless you're making a profit. Corporate tax receipts are now at the lowest level they have been at since 2009. Yet where's the market? All-time highs. It's a crazy environment. Anyway, we got to go. I've rambled on way too long. Shocker. But that'll be it for the market update, because I really want to get to this Gundlach interview and really want to go over what he said. Because, again, I just think it's so important, just so you guys know that I'm not just sitting here like a typical charlatan that makes me so frustrated all the time. Oh, you know, one other thing I got to mention, too. Darren, you'll get a kick out of this. So I'm driving down the freeway this week. Got my new advisor, Chad. Hired Chad. It's actually the grandson of Frosty Western. Chad was the Chad was a quarterback of our team when I played for PLU that won the national title in 1999. Chad was the Division III Heisman Trophy winner, essentially. And very sharp guy. So he started off as a new advisor. We're driving down the road. He's getting training. We're still, you know, training him. He's going around with me to meet with clients, things like that. And I heard a funny ad on the radio. Heard another financial firm, a competitor of ours, had a whole ad based on a bond replacement strategy. How interest rates were going to go up and a bond replacement strategy. And I just sat there and I thought, man, has my voice changed? Did I get a voice change, a voiceover? And I was mad. I'm not mad, but I do think it's funny. It's probably because we've taken clients there because they're mad about how little of their money their bonds have made. But anyway, it's spreading. That's good. The important thing is that it spreads, not that we get credit for it. But I did find that funny, is that we're becoming a maybe like a trial ground for other guys. Oh, well, he's been saying it for a while. It must work. Now we'll give it a run. And what do they say? Imitation is the greatest form of flattery, right? Anyway, well, at least they're doing the right thing, hopefully. But hey, our bond replacement strategy, guys, it's spreading, and it's like our old coach Frosty Westring used to say, gentlemen, it's not good because it's old. It's old because it's good. And the reason it's spreading is because it's working, and they're losing clients because clients are tired of paying more in fees than they are making in their bond funds. And I'm not saying that all of you are. I'm saying that I see it regularly. And for those that aren't, maybe they're making an excess 60 basis points on their bond portfolio. Anyway, there's a better way to go, guys. There's a better way to manage the risk. There's a better way than having 40 to 50% of your portfolio making less than the inflation rate because you're paying an advisor 1.5% to manage fixed income bond funds, okay? And if you want to know the better way to do that, to cut your fees drastically, usually by about a third, increase the upside of the portfolio, increase the tax efficiency, have access to our estate planning service that we provide free of charge from our clients, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. I see Dory outside right now walking his dog. It's dog day here in the radio station. Anyway, you can follow us on Twitter at KYR Radio. You guys know the drill. Get the free booklet. If you want to do a consultation over email, email us directly. Call us. Get the booklet. Whatever it is. You guys know the drill. Anyway, we'll be right back to go over this Jeff Gundlach interview. Stick with us. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. And Zach, as we close out the year and look ahead to a crazy election year in 2020, what's the number one thing investors need to be aware of?
Dory, I'll tell you the same thing I told you when you and Suzanne became clients. Risk management. We're looking at 10 to 15 new prospective client portfolios every week. And I see two things. A, people are being far too cautious, or B, people aren't being nearly cautious enough. And remember, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. We can take less risk, pay far less in fees, and increase our upside potential. And our free booklet, Common Sense Investing, will show you exactly how we do that.
Call Zach right now to get your free copy of Common Sense Investing, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK or knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement where the firm's licensed to conduct business. Bulwark Capital is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor. One of the biggest mistakes you can make heading into retirement is not planning for the high costs of an extended healthcare situation. Many people assume they have enough money saved only to watch everything they've worked hard for get whittled down to nothing from the ongoing costs of a long-term care situation. Do not make that mistake. By putting a long-term care plan in place, you guarantee yourself a source of funds to pay for care when needed, and you also know you will not become a burden on your family. Do what my wife and I did. Go learn about all the new long-term care plans offered by 525 Advisors. These new plans protect your savings, protect your family, and pay you back if you never use them. Learn more by attending one of the upcoming classes taught by Brian Ott, who's the host of Long-Term Care Radio right here on KYRO. Brian has a long-term care planning class coming up January 18th. Seating will be limited for this first class of the year. So sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. It's a free class. You'll get a copy of Brian's book, too. 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show, and we're going to jump right into it. I got to learn, well, first of all, I got to quit saying this every bloody week. I got to learn how to, we need to have a two-hour show. That's what we need. Maybe like a three-hour show. Everybody always asks me, like, man, is it hard to come up for with content for that show? And I'm like, no. It's we don't get to half the stuff typically. Probably just because I'm good at obloviating. hopefully it's a little more valuable than that. But anyway, yeah, no, the bond replacement. That was a funny one. You know, it was a mix between being mildly irritated and then all sitting there going, well, hey, at least they're saying the right thing. And like I said, you know, imitation's the greatest form of flattery, I guess. But I'm sitting there going, man, you're just now getting this memo? Man, our clients have been dealing with reduced fees and much greater returns than bonds since 2012. It's like warning people about a real estate collapse in 2011. A little late to the game. Anyway, but hey, better late than never. So wish him best of luck. Anyway, so let's get into this. So the Jeff Gundlach interview, like I said, we're going to air a couple spots here, guys. But it really is an interview that I listen to at full length. You should as well. Just get on there and type it. Google Jeff Gundlach and Gundlach CNBC interview. Do it at YouTube. It's 45 minutes long. Listen to the whole thing. Listen to the whole thing and see if it resonates. Now, the first thing that he addressed that I want to get to, and the reason we do this is because I want clients to understand, like we've been saying for years now on the radio, that this is not your grandparents' economy. This is not your grandparents' stock market. Okay, the Federal Reserve has a mandate. Well, originally had a mandate for price stability. That was it, the stability of the currency. And to do that, regardless of what it did to the underlying stock market, regardless of what it did to asset prices, regardless of what it did to the economy to some degree, right? The most important thing was the stability of the currency, the solvency of the currency. They can't control all that because they don't control government spending, but it was price stability. Then they later added full employment as an additional mandate. What they have never added, though, is stock market supporters. Now, I think there's several reasons why they do it, and we can't air the whole thing on the show. But in the past, I've explained to you that, and it's a catch-22, okay? I'm very critical of the Federal Reserve, yet at the same time, there are economic reasons and economic principles behind why they are concerned about stock market performance. One of the biggest reasons, in my humble opinion, is because of the asset spread or the way that wealth is distributed throughout the economy, meaning that in 1950, 91% or is 89, anyway, about 90% of household financial wealth in the United States was real assets. So think CDs, gold, cash, things of that nature. 9% were financial assets, okay, stocks, bonds, things of that nature, options, stuff like that. We fast forward to today, and those ratios are completely flipped. We've talked about this on the show before. And not to mention the fact that previously, millennials are a bigger generation now, but previously, the biggest generation in the history of our country were the baby boomers. They also happen to be the most wealthy because they spent the majority of their career in the Federal Reserve pumping era, where nobody could lose, with skyrocketing asset prices. And they saved. I'm not trying to demean anybody, but it's not their fault. They did what they were supposed to do. But anyway, these people are all transitioning into retirement, and they are living on primarily what? They're living on their retirement savings, their investments. So when those investments take a hit, it is disproportionately more impactful on our economy than it ever has been. So the Federal Reserve goes, well, we got to keep asset prices elevated. And I go, whoa, 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 whoa. I understand why you think that. But perhaps that's the same kind of thinking that has led us to a place where we are today, where the dispersion or the distance between the wealthy and the poor in this country has got the, we got the greatest wealth gap in the history of our country. Maybe that thinking or that logic being deployed by the Federal Reserve has something to do with that. Now, the Federal Reserve will tell you it doesn't. Yet at the same time, we know for a fact that they are operating outside of their dual mandate, meaning we know for a fact that stock market conditions are influencing their decisions, despite the fact that they say they're not. And we'll air this first segment here right now, but I want to set it up. So Gundlach is toward the beginning of this interview. As a matter of fact, I believe this is about the 3-minute mark into the interview. And they're talking about Federal Reserve policy. And he's being interviewed by CNBC, which is basically a Federal Reserve cheering section. Is the Federal Reserve says it. I mean, look at what they've done. I mean, you know, how can you question these guys? Well, guys, because you've got civil unrest to the magnitude where two of the leading candidates in the Democratic Party are self-avowed socialists. You got the widest wealth gap in history. You got schmucks like Dennis Muilenburg from Boeing, right, making completely irresponsible and quasi-sociopathic decisions to generate a little extra profit at the expense of 340 lives and 35% drops in companies' earnings, right? I understand why there's the backlash, but the Federal Reserve refuses to take any responsibility for it, and they continue on the way they are. And how do we know that? And Gundlach lays this out better than I could. But how do we know that? How do we know this isn't just Zach just ripping the Federal Reserve because we got to have a boogeyman and somebody's got to get blamed? Well, look, the end of last year, I think, is a tell. Okay? They laid their cards out. Powell is out there September, October, November saying, look, and in November, look, the rate rises are on autopilot. Rates must go higher. The economy can handle it. You know, we've done all our work and our Fed models, and we know what we're doing. We're the grand wizards of economics and finance. Trust us. 3 weeks later, he's running out of the Eccles building saying, hey, scratch everything you just heard. We're going to do an insurance cut. We're going to do a mid-cycle adjustment. I love how they coin these phrases and this terminology for everything they do. Completely reverses course. Why? What changed? Yeah, the market dropped another 10%. That's it. And if you look back over the last 10 years, for whatever reason, they've determined that 20% on the SPOOS or the SPY, call it the SPOOS, but S&P 500, a 20% drop is that maximum pain level that they're not going to go over. And they've done it every time. I mean, and it stopped on a dime at 20% and gin it back up. So what we're trying to tell you is that when you know that you've got markets that are being primarily driven by artificial forces, be prepared for the artificial or sources of liquidity or that artificial pump. Be prepared for it to stop, and be prepared for it to stop suddenly. And more importantly, have a portfolio that can withstand that. So without further ado, let's launch this first piece. I don't want them taking it from me. Listen to Jeff Gundlach. From Double Line Capital, the anointed bond king. Darren, cue that up for us.
Actually, he's had to manage his way through all of that.
Yes, I suppose. You're being kind of generous. I mean, when he did the quantitative tightening autopilot statement and the successive interest rate increases, the risk asset markets were already having trouble. It wasn't like that suddenly him saying that led to the decline of over 20% in the stock market and the closure of the junk bond market, where there were 2 months where you couldn't even float a new issue junk bond in the fourth quarter of 2018 because the market was closed. This was all because of what the Fed was doing. And yet it was when the market finally flushed out down in late December where the apology tour came out. So I think that what happened was the Fed thought they had a framework that was working. The markets threw a temper tantrum about it, and they were forced then to go back to basically the Fed model that we've had for quite a few years now, which is following the market rather than, I mean, the great Paul Volcker just passed away this week at age 92. He was the one that really had control over what the interest rates were and wasn't just listening to the market. And I wish that if the Federal Reserve has a purpose, it should be to have an outlook and follow it regardless of what the market does. And instead, Jay Powell capitulated and went along with what the bond market has said. And now The bond market's completely in sync with the Fed. I mean, you have Fed funds rates, the same basically as the two-year Treasury, which is kind of the same as the five-year Treasury, which means that the Fed is now comfortably on hold. But what Jay Powell has done is he raised rates four times and in 2018, then cut rates three times in 2019. We basically have gone nowhere. We've just put ourselves on kind of a wild ride, which I believe was unnecessary.
So we're going to get into the next segment where he talks about the corporate bond markets. I think that's the most important thing. But what you see here and the proof that I wanted to lay out to you is that we have a tail wagging the dog scenario, and that the Federal Reserve is willing to completely backtrack on everything they have laid out in the course of 3 weeks. Why? Why? Well, it kind of goes along the lines of the old, you know, asteroid headed to Earth kind of thing. Would anybody tell us, right? Do they have an incentive to tell us, look, the reason we had to launch a $100 billion standing repo facility and start expanding our balance sheet again is because there is something rotting in the global financial system and we've got a paper over it. Are they going to tell you that? I mean, remember, these are the same people that said as late as 2006 that, quote unquote, the issues in subprime mortgages are contained. Now, maybe they believed it. I have a hard time. But, well, I don't know, a lot of incompetency running around there. But this is all part of the shtick. This is all part of it. And Darren, you know what? I think we're just going to continue on here. It was time for me to make a cut, but I ran over on this too. So we're just going to keep rolling. So the other thing I want to get to before we run is we are coming up short on time, but I want to get to the other part. What is one of the essential core parts of our arguments been for the last 3 years? That, look, nobody knows what's going to happen in stock markets, which is why we have a two-pronged approach on our equity portfolios. We have a Vanguard-like globally allocated ETF portfolio focused on tax efficiency and extremely low cost, but we also overlay on it our algorithmic model, which is reading economic signs, and it is meant to, when the economy is throwing off hard recessionary signals, we're not trying to mute out the 10 and 15% dips, because markets can recover in 2 months from that, 3 months. We're trying to eliminate the catastrophic loss. So we have an algorithm in there that when it's reading the hardcore economic data and the economy goes into recessionary mode, it automatically de-risks the portfolio and switches from stock ETFs to U.S. government bond ETFs. When those red lights and those recessionary lights go off, the algorithm switches back to stock ETFs. So basically what you've got is a Vanguard-style, asset-allocated, internationally diversified, low-cost ETF portfolio, but with an ejection handle on it, meant to eliminate the catastrophic loss. On the other side of it, we've got a value-based portfolio that we manage ourselves with individual stocks, individual trades, and we hedge that portfolio. Not all the time, but when things are a little dicey, we hedge it. Because why? Because we're managing retirement assets. We must take the risk of a catastrophic loss off the table. Okay? But on the one thing that we've been hitting the hardest, and by the way, the reason I like that approach is, let's say the algorithm, now that algorithm resulted in us, that portfolio made money in 08-09. We're not saying that it is going to again. Okay, there's no guarantee, but it actually went up over 08-09, even though the S&P was down 63% from top to bottom. But the reason I like it is, what, let's say the algorithm doesn't work. What are you left with? You're left with the same portfolio you got at Vanguard already, right? That's your default. Your default, your worst case scenario is you got exactly what you would have had. But with a little bit increase in fee, you got a defensive strategy that should and has in the past done a phenomenal job of protecting capital. And so it's not like you're taking our word for it, but would you pay an extra 30 basis points to have something like that that was a defensive strategy that resulted in that Vanguard ETF low-cost portfolio actually making money in 08-09? Would you pay 25 or 30 basis points for it? Your answer should be yes. Because worst case scenario is you're down a few percentage points over a decade. But if it turns a 40% loss into a 20% loss, it more than paid for itself. right? So that we're not just asking you to rely on our acumen. We've got different styles of stock investing built into the portfolio. Now, like I said, what we've hammered on, though, the easiest way to improve your returns and to drastically lower your risk and fees is by using our bond replacement strategy. And it isn't because we're trying to sell that strategy. It's because the bond market is massively vulnerable. You're taking more risks in bond investing than you ever have in the history of mankind, because bond prices are higher and yields are the lowest they've ever been, right? We got negative yielding sovereign debt all over the world. So what we're saying is, hey, everybody's focused on the stocks. Let's also talk about the bonds. If we can insure your bond portfolio against loss with zero management fees and get it averaging somewhere in that 5 to 6, 6.5% range versus the 2 or the 1.5 you're making net of fees on your current bond portfolio, you're more secure. You're paying no fees on it. You're making on average 2, 2.5, 3 times as much money, taking less risk. Why wouldn't you do that? Well, you should. And apparently, one of our competitors now agrees with me. So if you don't believe me, you could believe them. But anyway, now I want to run this next piece because Jeff Gundlach does a great job of talking about these risks in the bond market. So you know it's not just Zach sitting here blowing smoke on the air. Darren, let it go.
Credit risk to me right now is very dangerous. There's a whole cocktail of fundamentals that I think lead to wanting to be early on exiting the corporate bond market. And I think the time to be exiting the corporate bond market is presently, because the corporate bond market is enormously bigger than it was prior to the global financial crisis. It was around $5 trillion then. It's $11 trillion now. And the corporate bond market is, I believe, misrated. There's a study by Morgan Stanley Research that I've been referencing now for quite some time. They've been doing this for quite a few years that basically says, let's pretend that Morgan Stanley Research is a rating agency. And let's pretend that they're completely objective, but simplistic. So all they use is leverage ratios of corporations' debt in assessing what their rating should be. Morgan Stanley Research Department says that if you simply use leverage ratio, that 39%, fully 39% of the investment-grade corporate bond market should be rated junk right now. Imagine that. They're not rated junk right now because they're being a little bit lenient, I believe, relative to their downgrade system at the rating agencies. But if 39% of the corporate bond market would be downgraded to junk, you would see some pretty horrific movement. Against a backdrop of corporate debt to GDP being an all-time high and the leverage ratios of net debt to EBITDA in both the investment grade and the junk bond market are at all-time record highs. So spreads are extremely narrow in corporate bonds. In fact, they're narrower than people think. People look at historical charts. They go back several decades, and they say, how much extra yield do I get from investment-grade corporate bonds versus treasuries? And the conclusion you draw from that is it's kind of low by historical standards, so that raises a caution flag. However, the percentage of the investment-grade corporate bond market that's rated single-A or higher is at an all-time low. It used to be 2/3 of the corporate bond market was rated single A or higher 25 years ago. Now it's 35%.
I mean, that just kind of says it all, doesn't it? So it's not just me, guys. We're trying to get this information to you because look, it's to no fault their own, but the modern financial advisory system is just telling you to trust the outputs. What are you hearing from Jeff Gundlach? That there are buildups and excesses in this economy that exceed anything that we have seen in financial history. Okay, I do not think it is hyperbolic to say that most likely will result in outcomes that are more violent and dramatic than any others we have seen in history. I'm not telling you to sell your Google and Apple and Netflix. That's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about bonds. Apparently other firms are too now. But the easiest thing we can do to cut your risk, for crying out loud, is to use that bond replacement strategy we're talking about. You got bonds. Bonds right now are the equivalent of picking up pennies in front of a steamroller. You might get a pocket full of pennies, but you're going to get flattened. There's no upside. It is a negatively convex investment the way that most of you are using them. There's a better way. There's a better way to use our bond replacement strategy. And look, guys, it's not sexy. We're not going to beat the stock market heads up over the next 10 years. But the way it works, and it works beautifully in an inflationary environment, first and foremost, it's insured against loss. It will be the only financial asset you own, period, that is insured against loss. When you listen to guys like Jeff Gundlach or me talk, I think having one asset that's insured against loss probably isn't a bad idea. In the meantime, you pay no management expenses on it, and it's capturing 50 to 60, depending on the product, 50 to 60% of the upside of the stock market. And it's insured against loss in years where it goes down. Averages somewhere between, you know, 4.5 on the historically low side, 6.5 on the historically high side. Again, depends on the product and the indexing methodology used. But, yeah, and it's called an annuity. And that's the word that everybody freaks out at. Oh, it's not an income annuity the way it's annuity only by title. But the point is at the end of the day, what matters? What does it pay me? What does it cost? What is my risk? If you win in all three categories versus another asset class, that's what you should do. Now, we don't have to sell this to our existing clients because they've experienced it. Again, we're not talking about 15% annualized returns. But we're smoking the door, beating the brakes off bond portfolios, and we're doing it with less risk and no cost. And for a lot of you, the bond portion of your portfolio is 40 or 50% of your life savings. If we start generating 5% as opposed to 2, that's a game changer, guys. That's as much as 30, 35, 40, 50 grand a year for some of you. Hey, would you like an extra 50 grand a year with no cost and no risk? If you say no, God help you. I can't believe it. We're already out of time. I think Darren rigged the clock. You rigged the clock. You're shaving points. You're like a shady mortgage broker. You're shaving points on the back and the front. Anyway, so guys, if this stuff interests you, and again, I encourage you, go listen to the art. Don't just listen to some dude on the radio. Listen to Jeff Gundlach. Take it from him, the bond king, the anointed bond king. Listen to what he has to say. And if our approach interests you, that shields you from that debt bomb he's describing there, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. You can follow us on Twitter to get my daily insightful thoughts and sarcasm at KYR Radio on Twitter. And guys, the other thing too, met so many of you at our seminar event that we did a couple weeks back. Awesome. We had so much fun and had such a great turnout that we're going to roll out 4 or 5 of those in the next year. They're going to be at different locations around the Sound. So if you're down south or you're further up north, we're going to be getting to those areas. Keep that in mind. If that interests you already, feel free to email in and we'll put your name on a list. We're going to be releasing those dates here in the next two, three weeks or so. But and guys, as always, too, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. And if that feels too forward, shoot an email in. This is the rest of your life we're talking about. If you take the information that we give you and you go execute it somewhere else, fine. Just do it. Don't be sitting there telling me when you see me in a supermarket 5 years from now, hey, you warned me and I should have listened. Well, listen now. Save yourself risk. Save yourself the fees. Improve your upside. Give us a call. Email us. Ask for the free booklet, Common Sense Investing, on Dory's show he's always talking about. Anyway, you guys know the drill. Got a big game coming up tomorrow. Go Hawks. Have a great weekend. And we will see you next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
One of the biggest mistakes you can make heading into retirement is not planning for the high costs of an extended healthcare situation. Many people assume they have enough money saved only to watch everything they've worked hard for get whittled down to nothing from the ongoing costs of a long-term care situation. Do not make that mistake. By putting a long-term care plan in place, you guarantee yourself a source of funds to pay for care when needed, and you also know you will not become a burden on your family. Do what my wife and I did. Go learn about all the new long-term care plans offered by 525 Advisors. These new plans protect your savings, protect your family, and pay you back if you never use them. Learn more by attending one of the upcoming classes taught by Brian Ott, who's the host of Long-Term Care Radio right here on Cairo. Brian has a long-term care planning class coming up January 18th. Seating will be limited for this first class of the year. So sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. It's a free class. You'll get a copy of Brian's book, too. 525longtermcare.com.